It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Sandy Rios with you. That was the sound this morning in South Korea as 55 American remains were returned from the Korean War and returned by the North Koreans. It's pretty amazing. You know, I don't think I've ever heard a more beautiful instrumental rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner. You know, I just think things are changing. Our sense of our history. If only we could communicate to the people who've come lately to our shore, don't know our history, to our kids who don't understand the beauty of the origins of that song, of the people who died so that we could be free. If only we could help them to catch a vision of why being an American is so unique and special and can be shared with people around the world. It's an ideology about freedom and rights and the worth of each individual. It's amazing, based on biblical principles. And so that's what happened this morning in South Korea. Those bodies were loaded onto an airplane. They are flying. I'm not sure if they're there yet, but they're flying to Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii, where Vice President Pence, whose own father served in the Korean War, will be greeting them, and there'll be a ceremony. Of course, they have to figure out whether the remains are truly Americans. There's a lot of confusion about that, but symbolically, it's just a beautiful thing. You know, we have, for those of you who served in the military, you know this, but there's so few percentage-wise who've served anymore that this is maybe not common knowledge, but one of the big ethics of being an American soldier, airman, whatever branch you serve in, is that you leave no man behind. You don't leave people behind. Lives matter. Each and every single life matters. And even if it's their remains after they die, you don't leave them on foreign soil. We've always done this. You know, it's interesting. It's that emphasis on the importance and worth of each individual. That is truly an American principle. It's a Christian principle. It's the reason why we fight to save babies. It's why abortion was so abhorrent to so many of us, because we value human life in a very, very unique way, a Christian way. And so the Korean War, of course, I just have to briefly say that's the war that so many don't know so little about. It broke out right after World War II, not long after it. It was still fresh. It was when the Chinese invaded the Korean Peninsula, and we were pushing back to try to help the Korean people stay free from the threat of communism. And because of the politicians in Washington, they may sound familiar to you, We were winning that war, making our way north into Korea when the politicians of Washington gridlocked and our troops were ordered to stop their advance and the fighting stopped. But there were thousands of American soldiers who lost their lives. Many of them are still alive who fought in that war, who are your grandfathers, you know, the greatest generation in World War II. So many of them have passed now. So now this is our older generation. There's a beautiful memorial to the Korean War in Washington. If you haven't seen it, it really is one of the most emotional, moving memorials we have to any of the wars, because the war was fought in such horrible weather. The conditions in Korea are just dreadful, terrible winters. And so it was a dreadful war, but so many Americans in good faith, in some ways you might compare it to Vietnam in the sense that they did not get the support from their government to finish the task. And so that's why Korea ended up being divided into North Korean dreadful, horrible communism and the freedom of the South, which has caused the South Koreans to flourish. Many of them have become Christians, in fact, hundreds of thousands of them. And so it's just an incredible story that has maybe not been told the way it should have been. All right, there's so much to tell you today, and actually it's encouraging. I don't know if you saw President Trump in Tampa, Florida last night, but I did. And I want you to hear just a tiny bit of what he said. Let's listen.
U.S. economy grew at 4.1% last quarter. We're in the longest positive job growth streak in history. Democrats want to raise your taxes. They want to destroy your jobs. Democrats want open borders, which equals massive crime. We want maximum border security and respect for our heroes, ICE, Border Patrol, and law enforcement. And we're going to have tremendous border security that will include the wall. Look at Judge Kavanaugh. So far, the Democrats haven't given us any votes, and that's because they will do anything they can to not help the Trump agenda. Under previous administrations, we never won. We got used to never winning. The economy is too good. The jobs are too strong. We're doing too well. I will leave now because I am boring you to death. Thank you.
You know what? If you want to be encouraged, go to a President Donald Trump rally or at least watch it on television. You know, forget the regular news, which can be pretty oppressive. There's something about his indomitable spirit that is just electric. And there were thousands of people in that gathered in Tampa. And then outside, thousands more. They had set up jumbotrons, loudspeakers. The enthusiasm was just amazing, as it always is. I've never seen a bad Trump rally. And, of course, he said a lot of things. That was a montage, courtesy of Fox and Friends this morning. But he spoke a long time, and it's always interesting. It really is, and it's so encouraging. Meanwhile, CNN made he always gives the press a hard time at these rallies. So there was a protester, and he said, look, there's one protester, and tomorrow the headlines will be hundreds of people protesting at the Trump rally, and there's one person as they pulled the person out. So meanwhile, Jim Acosta stood up to give a live report. The cameras are always positioned toward the back of the room. And if you've never been in these rooms, it's pretty amazing. It's like a barrage of these huge cameras. But Jim Acosta from CNN stood to give a live report, but he didn't get a very good reception, and I thought you might want to hear it. Let's listen.
Including the president, are hiding from the press. And Wolf, just to give you a sense as to what's happening right now, you can hear there is a chorus of boos and other chants from this Trump crowd here in Tampa, Florida. They're saying things like CNN sucks, go home, and fake news. Wolf, obviously, all of those things are false. We're staying right here. We're going to do our job and report on this rally to all of our viewers here tonight. Wolf.
As you should. All right, Jim Acosta, we'll stay in very close touch with you.
Yeah, that's not going to be, that has got to be very difficult. But it's true that CNN distorts the news. It's true that they are absolutely fixated on harassing Donald Trump, that they fail to cover other issues. They fail to cover the economy fairly. They just don't cover the things they should be covering. They are rightly criticized. I don't know about the method, but people are getting sick of it. And so that's what happened last night when CNN was there. I think the point would be to let CNN be there, but report what's happening. Stop the campaign, the political campaign. You're supposed to be a news organization. So that's what happened last night. And I've got some other pieces of news here. Got lots of news today, actually. Trump supporters, you know, have a right to be angry. You may remember, I surely do, how they were treated during the campaign, attacked at various meetings and rallies, not protected by police. And now this is really interesting because the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco has decided that Trump supporters can sue San Jose police officers over rally violence. Let me just, what they're saying is that they were ushered by the police, funneled into the midst of these violent protesters. And when they started to, when the fights began and the violence was perpetrated on them, the officers were completely deliberately indifferent, did nothing. Now the Ninth Circuit has ruled that the Trump supporters at that rally are going to be able to sue these policemen. It's a little more complex than that, but I want to, because I have other stories, I want to move on for right now. We'll probably come back to that. The Rasmussen Daily Presidential Tracking Poll, Rasmussen is the only one, I think, now who's tracking this, shows that as of Tuesday, 48% of likely U.S. voters approve of President Trump's job performance, while 50% disapprove. 35% strongly approve of the way Trump is performing, and 43% strongly disapprove. 48% of voters believe Trump's presidential campaign was more likely than Clinton's to have illegally colluded with foreign operatives, and nearly as many, 41%, believe Clinton's campaign is more likely the offender. I think that's interesting. I mean, it's still, I think, not where it should be, but it's a pretty close margin, don't you think? So that's the story on that. Oh, 41% of likely U.S. voters now think that the country is heading in the right direction. So, you know, that's, again, probably not where it should be, but it is progress. Now, we talked about, remember Matt Gaetz, we played the clip of him talking about how Twitter is shadow banning, and without going into all the explanation, making it difficult for conservative people, conservative-minded people, to get their message out. They're being blunted and stopped and hidden, like Facebook is doing to conservatives. Well, just yesterday, Mark Roberts, who's a congressional candidate in Oregon, tweeted something about Mrs. Trump, Melania Trump, which is just vile and vulgar. And he did it in response to Charlie Kirk. Charlie's the founder of Turning Point USA. This is Charlie's tweet. He said, there are 39 fewer staffers dedicated to the First Lady of the United States than under Obama. There are only 5 staffers dedicated to Melania Trump versus 44 who served Michelle Obama. So Mark Roberts, in response to that, I don't even know that I want to read this. I'll just read the first part of it. He tweets, did you know the First Lady works by the hour? And then he says some, he just adds other things that are just vulgar. And so he was reported for that by Twitter. And interestingly enough, Twitter comes back with this. We have investigated the reported content and could not identify any violations of the Twitter rules. Accordingly, we have not taken action at this time. So they're taking down conservative tweets, hiding them. Oh, by the way, Mark responds. He's pretty preening now. He says, I invite that blank to sue me. That's what he says about Mrs. Trump. And by the way, the Federalist Kathleen McKinley was reportedly barred last Friday, just for an example, after expressing opposition to honor killings and transgender soldiers serving in the U.S. military. To restore her account, Twitter forced McKinley to delete the 2 tweets, one a year old and the other posted a month ago, because they were found to have purportedly violated the tech giant's rules against hateful conduct. So you see how this goes, don't you? And that's where we're headed if we don't continue to fight. Oh, also just a really fun story. There was a painter out of Utah who painted a picture of Donald Trump, Mike Pence, and lots of his other staff, calling it Crossing the Swamp. It's based on, you know, the crossing the Delaware with George Washington. It is a great picture. And, of course, social media is going wild. Some are upset. Some think it's great. It is a great photo. We'll put this on our Facebook page so that you can actually see it. It's just a lot of fun. All right, there's a lot going on, so you know, stay tuned. We'll be back with more Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
Welcome to the AFA Spotlight. I'm Jim Stanley, General Manager of AFR. And we have a lot of divisions here at AFA. This week, we're shining the spotlight on American Family News.
Hi, this is AFR News Director Fred Jackson. More than 20 years ago, AFA's founder Don Weilman came to the realization that the message of conservative Christian America was being dismissed by the mainstream media. And so that's how American Family News was born. Well, since that time, God has brought together a team of reporters and anchors and editors whose daily mission is to produce newscasts that give our supporters not only the latest breaking news from around the country and the world, but also to give special coverage to news of particular interest to Christians, all of that from a biblical perspective. Over the years, we've taken our radio product and we now use that material to create a news website, onenewsnow.com. And we regard it as a privilege to serve God in this fashion.
Here's Steve Tiber.
8 Days of Hope started after Hurricane Katrina, helping people in Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, rebuild their homes back in 2005. Since then, this faith-based ministry has gone nationwide, and we've helped out dozens of cities, dozens of areas of the country after hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, or even snowstorms. And now you get a chance to be a difference maker. 8 Days of Hope 16. You can be the hands and feet of Jesus down in Houston from October 13th to October 20th. You can come for as little as 3 days or stay all 8 days. We provide the food and lodging. We're looking for skilled professional and people like me who are less skilled and just want to give back. For more information, go to our website, 8daysofhope.com. Click on the event, 8 Days of Hope 16, read the FAQs, and learn more about how you can make a difference with 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more and sign up to be a part of 8 Days of Hope 16 in Houston, Texas at 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
President Trump is doubling down on his threat to shut down the government unless Congress funds his border wall.
If we don't get border security after many, many years of talk within the United States, I would have no problem doing a shutdown. It's time we had proper border security. We're the laughingstock of the world. We have the worst immigration laws anywhere in the world.
The fact is, the president has an obligation to protect the nation, and frankly, we have no idea what's been coming across that border. Just the other day, a Jordanian was arrested in New York City, accused of trying to smuggle 6 Yemeni nationals from Mexico to Texas. Now, I'm no expert on Middle Eastern affairs, but I'd be willing to bet a jug of sweet tea those Yemeni nationals were not sneaking across the border to eat Hill Country brisket. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Mr. Alvarez, would you send your child to FRCs?
Again, I think we're missing the point. These individuals are there because they have broken a law. There has to be a process.
They have broken a law only as deemed so by the president with his...
No, ma'am. They're there for violation of Title 8 of the immigration of the U.S. and Nationality Act. Okay, they're 8 U.S.C. 1325. That's illegal entry is both a criminal and civil violation. They are in those FRCs pending the outcome of that civil immigration process. They have broken the law.
Well, these are mainly... My understanding is that under zero tolerance, these are no longer civil proceedings, but in fact, were criminal proceedings.
They were criminal proceedings when the Border Patrol prosecuted them, but at the conclusion of that process, once the individual came into ICE custody, they would go through administrative proceedings.
I'm confused.
Okay.
The criminal
proceeding is an individual being prosecuted for the criminal violation of improper entry.
So there you go. That's your Congress at work. That was Democratic Senator from Hawaii, Mazi Hirono. Receiving a quick lesson on U.S. immigration from ICE official Matthew Albans, testifying before Senate hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday. Just amazing, the ignorance. It is amazing, the ignorance. And these are the people that are leading us. And that's why, I guess I could say, 2018 is so important. Daniel Horowitz joins us this morning. Daniel's a good friend. He is the senior editor of Conservative Review. And really, no one follows. Daniel's following a million issues. But I think the immigration issue, I'm not sure anyone is covering it with as much detail as Daniel does so faithfully. And there's so much going on with it. I wanted to talk to him this morning. Good morning, Daniel.
Hey, good morning. Great to be back with you.
It's great to have you. All right, so she starts out, Senator Hirono, with this question, you know, would you allow your, how would you feel about your child going to, it's one of these centers where they keep the kids, which begs to mind an article you just wrote, Daniel, the lone voice here. You say this family separation crisis was built on lies. And I think we need to talk about that for a second, because no one is actually talking about it. The president caved on it, and they've wrung their hands and spent a ton of time trying to fix this alleged problem. But what have you discovered as you were researching this?
Sure. So first of all, I think this is a great way to tee this up, because everyone's missing the starting point here. If I came from Mars and just listened to the debate, I would think that the United States military went down to Honduras and grabbed a bunch of kids, brought them here, and threw them in detention facilities, and then we're having a debate over how luxurious or problematic these facilities are. The reality is, you know, the question of whether you would want your kid there is immaterial, because we're here minding our own business. There's something called sovereignty. It's a national private property right. We're not trying to harm anyone. We have an invasion at our border. What's happening is this. People forget that among the kids that have come, 80% of them have actually crossed over unaccompanied, right? This was the major rage before the family unit issue. 80% of them are still separated. It's only 20% that come with an alleged parent, and not all of them are even parents. So right off the bat, you see 80% of them have no problem self-separating in order to manipulate the American taxpayer and get in our country, get on our welfare system, and commit crimes and do all sorts of stuff. But even those 20%, they're not a separate demographic. A lot of them try multiple times. Sometimes they send their kids alone. Sometimes they come with them. And what tends to happen, and that ICE agent at the hearing actually did bring this issue up a little bit, brought it to life, is that they'll start off often, well, the starting point is people have been coming here illegally the last couple decades. So a massive percentage of Mexico and the Northern Triangle of Central America are in America. So what happens is other people then want to manipulate our manipulations and our weaknesses and then unite other family members with those who are already here illegally. So you'll have parents that will often self-separate in Honduras or Guatemala and send their kids to, let's say, aunts and uncles and cousins that are here, smuggle them in, because they know that we'll be more lenient on the kids instead of turning them back, as we should. Or sometimes they'll do the opposite. They'll leave their kids alone with family in Central America and unilaterally come here, evade the Border Patrol, settle here, and then pay a smuggler to call for them to bring the kids here. That's what they're doing. Where they don't succeed, now, obviously, ideally, they'd love to come together. But again, it's a lot easier to get a kid in, which is why often when they can't get themselves in and they're caught, they'll say goodbye to their kids. So several hundred of these individuals, when ICE tried to reunite them with their kids, they left because they would rather have their kids here, they'll come back for another bite at that apple. A lot of them, by the way, tried to come in illegally numerous times. Some of them already did and committed crimes here. This is a scam to fleece America. This has nothing to do with asylum. This is basically a number of people just want to come here for economic opportunity, and a lot of them are criminal aliens, and a lot of them have criminal records. This is the entire half of the story the media is ignoring.
You know, and Daniel, this is something that I've mentioned, but no one's really sat on this particular part of the story. The reason a lot of the separation was taking place was because of an order by an Obama judge named Dolly G. She said that kids who crossed the border with their parents could only be in custody for 20 days. That means they had to be released, but the parents were still being held because they had violated the law, violated our immigration law. And so the president had to choose between, you know, letting them all go, which was catch and release, or they had to do something. And so a lot of the separation was imposed by this Obama judge. It was really a no-win situation, which is the chaos that the left always sows in order to get their way. So, by the way, we're going to put your article, Government Data Shows the Entire Family Separation Crisis Was Built of Lies. We're going to put that on our Facebook page because there's a lot more detail that we didn't actually get into. Let me just say something else, Daniel. You probably know that the Koch-backed Koch brothers, the famous Koch brothers, they founded the Cato Institute, and there was a big article in USA Today, or an op-ed, yesterday, I think, where their director of economic studies said that the U.S. has nothing to fear and much to gain from open borders. And he goes on to make his case. And the second thing I want to mention before we go into this next, majority of Democratic voters now say that the 12 million illegal aliens currently residing in the United States should be given the right to vote. 54% of Democrats support giving illegal aliens the right to vote. 53% of self-described liberals say they support giving illegal aliens the right to vote. But nearly 60% of all voters say illegal aliens should not be given voting rights. Okay, so the point is, we have a lot of people pushing for open borders and rights for voting for illegal immigrants. But we, I guess, thought still that our Congress had our backs on this. And I think the big untold story of the week, Daniel, is what happened in the appropriations process, which I have yet to tell about in my program. And I want you to tell people what certainly the House did this week that is just egregious.
You know, Madison wrote in the Federalist Papers that vesting the power of the purse in the People's House, the House of Representatives, was the last way to address grievances. You know, that's our last call to action. And we have a lot of grievances. As you mentioned, contrary to Cato, there's a lot to fear. We have the worst gang and drug crisis in America ever. What nobody will tell you in Washington is, when did this start? You know when it started? Man, we've had drug overdoses, you know, from prescriptions since the 90s when painkillers were used, but there was a 400% increase in the fentanyl and now cocaine and meth and all this stuff. Starting when? It was 2014. You know what happened in 2014? That was the wave of unaccompanied, so to speak, minors from Central America. You know, we've written dozens of articles, a series at Conservative Review detailing how the amalgamation of the border surge and the rise of sanctuary cities, because, you know, there's one thing to bring in the drug runners and the drugs, but then you have to have them operate undetected, and most of them are criminal alien networks, and if we didn't have sanctuary cities, the minute you catch them on the street, streets with drugs, which, you know, is so easy to do, you just throw them out, right? You don't have to land a conviction because they're illegal, so you just deport them. That's how dangerous sanctuary cities are. Anyway, I say this all, the point is that we need a Republican Congress to address this in the budget bill, address sanctuary cities, address the border surge, the wall, the fake asylum, the fake UAC laws that are being abused, and the problem with the courts that they could address in the budget bill as well. And instead of throwing a touchdown, they tossed an interception. You had the entire House Appropriation Committee, the entirety of that committee, and we have all the names in this article, is that it's a big committee. There's over 20 of these people. Every one of them joined with the Democrats to use the budget bill to make it worse, to rip the doors off the hinges. They prohibited USCIS from implementing Sessions' sane order to properly interpret asylum law, that a credible fear means an individualized persecution at the hands of government, not simply that you're just fleeing general third world bad conditions in some of these countries. They blocked that. You know, rather than defunding amnesty, they defunded enforcement, and then they defunded deportations of Obama's amnesty. So remember, I mean, I was on your show so many times the last couple of years under Obama saying how we need the budget bill to defund Obama's amnesty, and they never did it. Now they're defunding enforcement. You know, you talk about this Alexandria Cortez a lot. We're talking about the radical left taking over in primaries, Democrat primaries. We have Republicans who fundamentally subscribe to the same philosophy. I don't have time to go through this all, but in addition, they also expanded low-skilled H-2 visas, breached the cap on you can bring in unlimited amounts. It's not just seasonal. I mean, these are the Republicans we have working for us.
Yeah, Daniel, before we continue, I just want to ask you, can you stay with me another segment past this one?
Sure.
Okay, because then, all right, then I'm going to slow down because I want to ask, I want to take this apart a little bit. The asylum amendment, I want us to sit on that for a second because to reiterate, the asylum claims are what has been probably the catalyst to causing as much of the illegal entry as anything because all the, in fact, under the Obama administration, I remember they were sending messages into Central America, giving them the language, claim this, say asylum, say, and so an asylum has traditionally been you're being targeted, in danger of your life in your country because you're a political opponent or some such thing like that. So now, please go back, I reiterate, this committee, this Republican committee, Appropriations Committee, is redefining asylum to include
Essentially the entire Central America. I'm not exaggerating here because they said anyone who claims they're fleeing violence. I mean, that is literally everyone there. That is Obama's policy. And as you noted, this is the catalyst. This is the linchpin of the entire cascading downstream effect of all of the ills from the drug cartels. Because remember, there's something in between the Central Americans and America, and those are the drug cartels. They control the border, Golfo, Zeta, Sinaloa, depending on which part of the border they're in. You are empowering, and this is what empowers them. Border agents tell me that what happens is when you have 50,000 bogus asylum claims a month coming over, what that does is they don't come organically. They have to pay these cartels. The cartels orchestrate the flow. So they'll shove these bogus asylum seekers at the border agents. You only have 50 or 60 patrolling a sector at any given time. That's not a lot for such a large expanse, and they're tied up dealing with them, processing them, medical attention, who knows what. That's when they bring in the MS-13 folks, the fentanyl, and the special interest aliens, a.k.a. the Middle Easterners, that have been increasing in the Laredo sector. And then, you know, it just encourages the entire social ills and everything for the illegals themselves, the rapes that take place at this hand. If you would stop this at the front door, which Sessions wants to do, that there's no more credible fear, unless you could show, you know, like anything else, like you're the Yazidis or the Jews in Iran. You know, you're an ethnicity or a religion that's persecuted, which say what you want about Central America, but it's one of the most homogenous places around. I mean, it just doesn't apply. It would shut down this entire problem, and it would put the cartels out of business.
All right, so they've redefined that, and then also in addition, as you said, you know, we know that Attorney General Sessions has done everything he can to crack down on immigration enforcement, to enforce our laws. So he gave this guidance, USCIS, and so they defunded it? They defunded it? You know, Daniel, there's the music. We need to take a break, but of course, I want to talk to you a little bit more detail about what they've actually done, who it was that did that. Whether it has a chance of passing in the Senate, and then, of course, President Trump's threatened to veto and to shut down the government, because that's really, I'm really curious to know what you think about that. My guest is Daniel Horowitz of Conservative Review, and this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Thanks to faster economic growth and a supportive atmosphere for scientific and technological innovation, the U.S. dethroned Hong Kong to retake first place as the world's most competitive economy, according to annual rankings by the Switzerland-based IMD World Competitiveness Center. The renewed top ranking aligns with the positive U.S. growth narrative over the past year. Venezuela is dead last in the world. The U.S. was followed in the rankings by Hong Kong, Singapore, the Netherlands, and Switzerland. But the United States is back where we belong, at number one. I like it.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
General Manager for American Family Radio, Jim Stanley.
Stacy Washington, does that name ring a bell? You may have heard her on Fox News, CNN, or our sister network, Urban Family Talk. She's proven to be a champion for biblical values. I'm excited to announce that beginning Monday, August 6th, you can hear Stacy on American Family Radio. Listen for Stacy on the Right weekday afternoons from 2 until 3 Central, just after Focal Point.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Civil rights activist and political prisoner Tommy Robinson is out of jail in Britain. He was incarcerated for reporting on a trial the UK government and media have worked hard to obscure. Mr. Robinson was covering the prosecution of Muslim men accused of an increasingly common crime in his country, the practice of immigrants usually from South Asia, raping, trafficking, and enslaving thousands of young British women and girls. The authorities, some of whom have long known about these so-called grooming gangs, should be in jail, not the man who has been trying to hold them accountable. Mr. Robinson is now out on bail, pending his appeal. His well-informed and courageous opposition to Sharia supremacist abuse of women, contempt for British laws and values, and other threats have inspired a worldwide Free Tommy campaign. Happily, our rallying cry can now be, Keep Tommy Free. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
If we don't get border security, after many, many years of talk within the United States, I would have no problem doing a shutdown. It's time we had proper border security with a laughing stock of the world.
The shutdown would be very bad news for the country, total disruption. And I think it'd be a very bad idea for Republicans going into
the November elections. Do you think it would hand?
I certainly don't like playing shutdown politics. I don't think it'd be helpful, so let's try and avoid it.
Yeah, so at all costs, avoid a shutdown, and it doesn't matter really what the House committees and now the Senate will consider in regard to keeping us safe and our borders secure. Sandy Rios back with you. My guest is Daniel Horowitz of Conservative Review. Let me just say that according to sources, The president had met with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan last week, making some sort of a bargain over these spending bills, these appropriations bills. You know, they have to fund the government they're supposed to do it once a year, but we've been having these deadlines for the last several years, so we've forgotten what normal process is like. So meanwhile, the Congress has been busy passing these appropriations bills. And by the way, I'll have Daniel comment on this in a second, but my understanding is all bad, as usual. All things that Democrats want and nothing controversial, because heaven knows we wouldn't want the government to shut down. So allegedly, the president agreed with them last week to just, we'll get these appropriations bills through and we will save all those messy, icky immigration issues for the Homeland Security funding, and we'll save that bill till after the election. That's how I understand it. Daniel, did I get that straight?
That is exactly it. This is worse than Lucy and the football. The next time, remember that. The important context, Sandy, for this is that, by my count, this will be the sixth budget betrayal of Trump's presidency. They already said the next time. They did it in March of 2017. They said, well, that's really the leftovers of Obama's budget. Let's wait till September. Then we'll really do it. And I remember Mick Mulvaney saying it. We come to September, again, Democrats get what they want on spending levels, and they get the policies, no wall, none of our immigration riders. Then did the same thing in December of 2017. Then you had February of 2018, which was the debt ceiling budget caps betrayal. It was a double whammy because they raised the debt ceiling unilaterally for free. Then you finally had the fifth one, the March omnibus, where Trump said, all right, never again. I'm not doing this again. And then now they're saying the next time again. And I just want your listeners to understand the importance of this. Here's a stark reality that I think we all need to face. Either we fight on this or Trump's presidency, at least as it relates to domestic policy, is done. Republicans will never get 60 votes in the Senate. That's just not in the cards. They're just not going to get it, even if Trump has a second term. The best they're going to have is more or less what they have now. They might be able to get a few more Senate seats, but they're not going to get 60. So either you use your veto threat on a budget bill on an issue that you know is a winning issue to leverage either changes in immigration and or spending levels, or you will never get it. Right? There's no, they try to obfuscate this, and the next time, as if people who don't understand the process think there's some sort of never land down the road. It's never going to get better, okay? And there's another dimension to this, which is whereas Democrats put what they believe are the best issues front and center precisely before an election, Republicans avoid our issues like the plague and say we'll do it after the election, which means never. But the reality is, as it stands now, Republicans stand to lose this election. The polling is pretty bad. You need to galvanize your base and win over suburban voters on issues especially pertaining to security. And there's no time like the present to have the fight because, frankly, if you wait until next time, there won't even be a next time because they're going to lose Congress.
So, Daniel, this is the mystery. I understand Paul Ryan. This has been his baby for years. He wants open border policy. He wants more labor for corporations, which are his buddies. And he's pushed for this in open ways and sneaky ways. But I don't understand why the people on this committee, led by Kevin Yoder, who's a Republican from Kansas, wouldn't suddenly, like, stab the American people back with this series of verbiage in this DHS funding bill, which are so horrendous. What would be the motivation for that? Is that because they're being funded by the Koch brothers who want open borders? What, to your knowledge, is the reason for this betrayal of the American people?
So first off, the Appropriations Committee, which is probably the most important committee, precisely because it's the most important, is the worst committee. They are all like Paul Ryan. That's how you get on the committee. You can't get on the committee if you're a Jim Jordan, a Dave Brat. They won't allow you on that committee. Now, there were one or two or three surprises. They probably just went along with it and didn't feel it was worth fighting it because ultimately that bill is not going to become law. But still, I mean, some of it I think is the Kochs. It's also the Chamber of Commerce and big business interests, especially with these low-skilled visas that, evidently we don't have enough third-world low-skilled immigration, and we need even more, but that's what they'll tell you in some of these K Street interests. So, you know, they're not thinking about security and sovereignty and the drugs and MS-13. And I mean, think about the cost in our schools. I mean, even the Washington Post has done a whole series of the problems with these Central American children and the security and social ills they bring. But there's also the fiscal cost. They just don't care. You know what I mean? They don't think in those terms. It's all transactional. It's very sad. But, you know, whereas the Democrats speak to the morality of their immorality, you know, they pound the lectern. This is immoral. This is against the Constitution. They said that at that hearing that you played from yesterday with Hirono and Feinstein. They believe it's immoral and unconstitutional not to have an MS-13 drug cartel border. But our people won't speak to the morality of our supposed morality and platform that we run on because they don't really believe in it. I mean, I hate to be so down, but this is the gulf between the two parties.
You know, and here's the irony. This is a continuing frustration. President Trump just had recently loudly endorsed Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas. He just recently was the reason why Martha Roby, who has such a bad record from Alabama, won her seat again, at least the primary. And they turn around, what, weeks, days later, and absolutely oppose the president in the verbiage of this House Appropriations bill. Daniel, I know that we don't have a magic, we don't have a crystal ball, but I still wonder. At this point, it seems like White House personnel has transformed at least some. So who has the president's ear that is causing him to endorse such bad people? Or is it that he's afraid that challengers may not have a chance to win and the House will be lost? What's going on there?
You know, there's Newton's laws of political physics and political motion. And, you know, basically the president's always going to gravitate to the strongest gravitational pull. You know, he's new to conservatism. He's done a lot of good things. His intuition is often in our direction. But absent a strong and focused conservative movement that is not just focused on the soap opera and the Mueller stuff, and I'm not saying it's not important, but is actually making the play calls on the issues, the legislation, the budget, and primaries, he's not going to hear from us. So that's number one. Now, who is he hearing from? Well, Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy has a rapport with him, and he gets his guys in there. And some of it, my understanding is, some of it is they have a seamless tie to Jared Kushner. I mean, this was always a concern of mine that you're never going to get closer to Trump than his own family. And Kushner believes that people that you and I like are, you know, unstable and problematic. He doesn't know much about who these people are, politics in general, which is why he has no business being in the White House. But he knows enough that he respects kind of like, you know, the Chamber of Commerce persona. And that's who he gets to endorse, which is why it's so frustrating that, you know, Trump will not endorse against any rhino incumbent. He'll, in fact, sometimes endorse against conservatives. And then even in open seats, you had two fabulous women running in open seats in Ohio a couple months ago, endorsed by Jim Jordan, but Kevin McCarthy endorsed other guys, and he didn't get involved. I mean, this is the thing. Trump cannot drain the swamp if he doesn't drain what's already there.
All right, so back to the notion that President Trump made an agreement with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell on these appropriations bills, and then I think it was Sunday or Monday that he tweeted that he's threatening a government shutdown. And then we heard sort of inclinations that he was backing off, and then he doubled down, and this is what he said, I believe, yesterday. He said, I don't care what the political ramifications are. Our immigration laws and border security have been a complete and total disaster for decades, and there is no way that the Democrats will allow it to be fixed without a government shutdown. So we doubled down. All right, so what do you think changed in him to make him go from making some agreement, a handshake with these guys, and then suddenly responding? Somebody must have gotten to him to tell him what's in this Homeland Security appropriations language?
You know, I don't have inside insight into that, but just based on what has constantly gone on in every one of these battles, there's nothing new with this, where, you know, he puts out trial balloons and will simultaneously kind of take both sides of it, which is just bizarre. That's just kind of what he does. The important thing is now is the time for conservatives to act. Now is the time to get in the president's face and say, hey, look, this is your time. This is your moment. We have your back. Don't give in to them. But if we wait until it's too late, like we did every other time, it's going to be too late. So I think it means he's on the cusp, and he could go in either direction, and we need to spend the entire August getting in his face. He is the only one who will listen to us. He cares deeply what conservatives think, but if the entire conservative media is focused on vanity, I mean, you know my criticism with that, and they're not focused on this, you know, again, he's going to drift into what McConnell and Ryan want to do. That's just what we've seen the first year and a half. On the other hand, if we actually strongly convince him otherwise, he's very sensitive to what conservatives want to do, and I think he would do this. And the important thing here is this. We were told throughout Obama's tenure that you could never win a budget brinkmanship fight over the bully pulpit of the presidency. Well, now not only do you have the presidency, but you have what's probably the most robust bully pulpit in Trump in the history of presidents. I mean, he could single-handedly shame these people. You're for MS-13. You're for bringing in drugs. You're for bringing hundreds of thousands of criminal aliens in. This is his time. This is his moment precisely before the election. Not to fight on this now is like having the ball in the fourth quarter down two touchdowns and saying, you know what, I don't really want to pass the ball because I might lose. Well, if you don't do anything, you're for sure going to lose.
So Daniel, we just have a couple of minutes left. So if he should veto this bill, then you're saying if he were to demand from McConnell and Ryan language that supported the conservative position on immigration, could they pass? Could those bills pass in the House and the Senate?
Well, they could definitely pass in the House. I think in the Senate, why is the starting point always what the Democrats want? Well, they're not going to pass it, so we have to pass what they want. It should be they can't pass our bill. You know, I always hear we don't have 60 votes. You're right. But you know who else doesn't? The Democrats. And neither do they have the House or the White House either. At some point, you have to have the fight. You can't have it on any issue. You have to pick the right issue. I believe this is a winning issue. Remember, Democrats did try to push a shutdown a little bit at the beginning of the year on immigration. They got crushed. I mean, this is going to bring out the abolish ICE crowd. You couldn't have a better issue to win back suburban voters.
Yeah. Daniel, 1 minute left. Now, you mentioned this, and I did want to ask you this, but now we don't have time to really flesh it out. As you watch the races, and you do watch them carefully around the country, I don't never know what to believe. I hear one day there's going to be a blue wave. I hear the next day there's going to be a red wave. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a dichotomy between the House and the Senate. The Senate is not a generic, you know, ballot. It really hinges on individual prominent statewide races. And just the map benefits Republicans. So I think, you know, obviously they're going to keep the Senate. They might even be able to, you know, win back a seat or two. The House, look, the polling I'm seeing is pretty doggone bad. And it's not for sure lost, but I think for our side just to, you know, put their fingers in the air and say, oh, we're winning, when really we're doing a bunch of nothing, but we have the power and we get all the liabilities, but none of the benefits, that's got to change. And I think, again, a budget fight over immigration and sovereignty is the best recipe to ensure that indeed we win the election.
Very interesting, as always. Daniel Horowitz, Conservative Review, will put his last few articles on our Facebook page so that you can read them and share them. Daniel, thanks for joining us this morning.
Take care. God bless.
Okay, could talk to you soon. Okay, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.